because of him. Then Aelin said, "You're not going to hunt the Vog with me." Adian stumbled a step.
"Oh, yes, I am."
"No, you're not," she said. "One, you're too recognizable."
"Don't even start."
She observed him for a long moment, as if assessing his every weakness and strength. At last she said, "Very well." He almost sagged in relief.
"But after all that? The Vog? The amulet?"
Adian pushed.
"Will we free magic?"
A nod.
"I assume you have a plan."
Another nod. He gritted his teeth.
"Do you care to share it?"
"Soon," she said sweetly.
"Gods help him. And after completing your mysterious, wonderful plan, we'll go to Terrasen."
He didn't want to ask about Dorian. He'd seen the anguish on her face that day in the garden. But if she couldn't put the princeling down, he'd do it. He wouldn't enjoy it, and the captain might very well kill him in return. But to keep Terrasen safe, he'd cut off Dorian's head.
Aelin nodded.
"Yes, we'll go. But you only have one legion.
There are men who would fight, and other territories that might come if you call."
"We can discuss this later."
He leashed his temper. "We need to be in Terrasen before the summer is out, before the snow starts falling in autumn, or else we wait until spring."
She nodded distantly. Yesterday afternoon, she dispatched the letters Adian had asked her to write, to Wren, the Bane, and the remaining loyal lords of Terrasen, letting them know they'd been reunited, and that anyone with magic in their veins was to lie low. He knew the remaining lords, the old cunning bastards, wouldn't appreciate orders like that, even from their queen. But he had to try.
"And," he added, because she really was going to shut him down about this, "we'll need money for that army."
She said quietly, "I know."
Not an answer. Adian tried again. "Even if men agree to fight on their honor alone, we stand a better chance of having greater numbers if we can pay them, not to mention feeding our forces and arming and supplying them."
For years now, he and the Bane had traversed from tavern to tavern, quietly raising funds for their own efforts. It still killed him to see the poorest of his people plunk hard-earned coins into the pans they'd passed around, to see the hope in their gaunt, scarred faces.
"The King of Otterlin emptied our royal coffers. It was one of the first things he did. The only money we have comes from whatever our people can donate, which isn't much, or whatever is granted by Otterlin."
"Another way of keeping control all these years," she murmured.
"Our people are beggared. They don't have two coppers to rub together these days, let alone to pay taxes."
"I wouldn't raise taxes to pay for a war," she said sharply. "And I'd rather not whore ourselves to foreign nations for loans, either. Not yet, anyway."
Adian's throat tightened at the bitterness coating her tone, as they both considered the other way money and men could be obtained. But he couldn't bring himself to mention selling her hand in marriage to a wealthy foreign kingdom.
Not yet.
So he just said, "It's something to start contemplating. If magic is indeed freed, we could recruit the wielders to our side. Offer them training, money, shelter. Imagine a soldier who can kill with blade and magic. It could turn the tide of a battle."
Shadows flickered in her eyes. "Indeed." He weighed her posture, the clarity of her gaze, her tired face. Too much. She'd already faced and survived too much. He'd seen the scars, the tattoos that covered them, peeking over the collar of her shirt every now and then. He hadn't yet dared to ask to see them. The bandaged bite on her arm was nothing compared to that pain, and the many others she hadn't mentioned. The scars all over her. The scars all over both of them.
"And then," he said, clearing his throat, "there's the blood oath."
He'd had endless hours in bed to compile this list. She stiffened enough that Adian quickly added,
"You don't have to, not yet. But when you're ready, I'm ready."
"You still want to swear it to me?" Her voice was flat.
"Of course I do."
He damned caution to hell and said,
"It was my right then and now. It can wait until we get to Terrasen. But it's going to be me who takes it. No one else." Her throat bobbed.
Right.
A breathless answer that he couldn't read. She let go of him and stalked toward one of the little training areas to test out her injured arm. Or maybe she wanted to get away from him. Maybe he'd broached the topic the wrong way. He might have hobbled off the roof had the door not opened and the captain appeared. Aelin was already striding toward Kaol with predatory focus. He'd hate to be on the receiving end of that gate.
What is it? She said.
He'd hate to be on the receiving end of that greeting, too. Adian limped for them as Kaol kicked the door shut behind him.
The shadow market is gone.
Aelin drew up short. What do you mean? The captain's face was tight and pale.
The Vogue soldiers. They went to the market tonight and sealed the exits with everyone inside. Then they burnt it. The people who tried to escape through the sewers found garrisons of soldiers waiting there. Swords ready.
That explained the smoke in the air. The plume on the horizon. Holy gods.
The king had to have lost his mind entirely.
Had to have stopped caring what the general public thought. Aelin's arms slackened at her sides.
Why?
The slight tremor in her voice had Adian's hackles rising. Those fey instincts roaring to shut the captain up, to rip out his throat, to end the cause of her pain and fear.
Because it got out that the rebels who freed him,
Kaol sent a cutting glance in Adian's direction,
were meeting in the shadow market to buy supplies.
Adian reached her side, close enough now to see the tightness of the captain's face, the gauntness that hadn't been there weeks ago, the last time they'd spoken.
And I suppose you blame me?
Aelin said with midnight softness. A muscle flickered on the captain's jaw. He didn't even nod a greeting to Adian, or acknowledge the months they'd spent working together. What had happened in that tower room?
The king could have ordered their slaughter by any means,
Kaol said, the slender scar on his face stark in the moonlight.
But he chose fire.
Aelin went impossibly still.
Adian snarled. You're a prick for suggesting the attack was a message for her.
Kaol at last turned his attention toward him.
You think it's not true?
Aelin cocked her head.
You came all this way to fling accusations in my face?
You told me to stop by tonight,
Kaol retorted, and Adian was half tempted to punch his teeth down his throat for the tone he used.
But I came to ask why you haven't moved on the clock tower. How many more innocent people are going to be caught in the crossfire of this?
It was an effort to keep his mouth shut. He didn't need to speak for Aelin, who said with flawless venom,
Are you suggesting that I don't care?
You risked everything, multiple lives, to get out one man. I think you find this city and its citizens to be expendable.
Aelin hissed.
Need I remind you, Captain, that you went to Endovir and did not blink at the slaves, at the mass graves? Need I remind you that I was starved and chained, and you let Duke Parrington force me to the ground at Dorian's feet while you did nothing? And now you have the nerve to accuse me of not caring.
When many of the people in this city have profited off the blood and misery of the very people you ignored. Adian stifled the snarl working its way up his throat. The captain had never said that about the initial meeting with his queen. Never said he hadn't stepped in while she was manhandled, humiliated. Had the captain even flinched at the scars on her back? Or merely examined them as though she were some prize animal?
You don't get to blame me,
Aelin breathed.
You don't get to blame me for the shadow market.
This city still needs protecting,
Kaol snapped. Aelin shrugged, heading for the roof door.
Or maybe this city should burn,
she murmured. A chill went down Adian's spine, even though he knew she'd said it to piss off the captain.
Maybe the world should burn,
she added, and stalked off the roof. Adian turned to the captain.
You want to pick a fight? You come to me, not her.
The captain just shook his head and stared across the slums. Adian followed his gaze, taking in the capital twinkling around them. He'd hated this city from the very first time he'd spotted the white walls, the glass castle. He'd been 19, and had bedded and reveled his way from one end of Rifthold to the other, trying to find something, anything to explain why Otterlin thought it was so God's damned superior, why Terrasen had fallen to its knees before these people. And when Adian had finished with the women and the parties, after Rifthold had dumped its riches at his feet and begged him for more, 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 he'd still hated it, even more than before. And all that time, and every time after, he'd had no idea that what he truly sought, what his shredded heart still dreamed of, was dwelling in a house of killers mere blocks away. At last, the captain said,
"You look more or less in one piece."
Adian gave him a wolf's grin. "And you won't be if you speak to her that way again." Kaol shook his head.
"Did you learn anything about Dorian while you were in the castle?"
"You insult my queen, and yet have the nerve to ask me for that information?" Kaol rubbed his brows with his thumb and forefinger.
"Please, just tell me. Today has been bad enough."
"Why?"
"I've been hunting the Vol commanders in the sewers since the fight in the pits.
We tracked them to their new nests, thank the gods,
but found no sign of humans being held prisoner. Yet more people have vanished than ever, right under our noses. Some of the other rebels want to abandon Rifthold, establish ourselves in other cities in anticipation of the Vol spreading.
And you?"
"I don't leave without Dorian."
Adian didn't have the heart to ask if that meant alive or dead. He sighed. "He came to me in the dungeons, taunted me.
There was no sign of the man inside him. He didn't even know who Sorsha was.
And then, maybe because he was feeling particularly kind, thanks to the golden-haired blessing in the apartment beneath, Adian said,
"I'm sorry about Dorian."
Kaol's shoulders sagged, as if an invisible weight pushed against them.
"Otterlin needs to have a future."
"So make yourself king."
"I'm not fit to be king."
The self-loathing in those words made Adian pity the captain, despite himself. Plans. Aelin had plans for everything, it seemed. She had invited the captain over tonight, he realized, not to discuss anything with her, but for this very conversation. He wondered when she would start confiding in him. These things took time, he reminded himself. She was used to a lifetime of secrecy. Learning to depend on him would take a bit of adjustment.
"I can think of worse alternatives," Adian said. "Like Holland."
"And what will you and Aelin do about Holland?"
Kaol asked, gazing toward the smoke.
"Where do you draw the line?"
"We don't kill children."
"Even ones who already show signs of corruption?"
"You don't get the right to fling that sort of horseshit in our faces. Not when your king murdered our family. Our people." Kaol's eyes flickered.
"I'm sorry."
Adian shook his head.
"We're not enemies. You can trust us. Trust Aelin." "No, I can't. Not anymore."
"Then it's your loss," Adian said.
"Good luck."
It was all he really had to offer the captain. Kaol stormed out of the warehouse apartment and across the street to where Nezrin was leaning against a building, arms crossed. Beneath the shadows of her hood, her mouth quirked to the side. "What happened?" He continued down the street, his blood roaring in his veins.
"Nothing."
"What did they say?" Nezrin kept up with him, meeting him step for step.
"None of your business, so drop it. Just because we work together doesn't mean you're entitled to know everything that goes on in my life."
Nezrin stiffened almost imperceptibly, and part of Kaol flinched, already yearning to take the words back. But it was true. He'd destroyed everything the day he fled the castle. And maybe he'd taken to hanging around with Nezrin because there was no one else who didn't look at him with pity in their eyes. Maybe it had been selfish of him to do it. Nezrin didn't bother with a goodbye before vanishing down an alley. At least he couldn't hate himself any more than he already did. Lying to Adian about the blood oath was awful. She would tell him. She would find a way to tell him. When things were less new. When he stopped looking at her as though she were a god's damned miracle and not a lying, cowardly piece of shit. Maybe the shadow market had been her fault. crouched on a rooftop, Aelin shook off the cloak of guilt and temper that had been smothering her for hours, and turned her attention to the alley below. Perfect. She'd tracked several different patrols tonight, noting which of the commanders wore black rings, which seemed more brutal than the rest, which didn't even try to move like humans. The man, or was he a demon now, hauling open a sewer grate in the street below, was one of the milder ones. She'd wanted to shadow this commander to wherever he made his nest, so she could at least give Kaol that information, prove to him how invested she was in the welfare of this piss-poor city. This commander's men had headed for the glowing glass palace, the thick river fog casting the entire hillside in greenish light. But he had veered away, going deeper into the slums and to the sewers beneath them. She watched him disappear through the sewer grate, then nimbly climbed off the roof, hurrying for the closest entrance that would connect to his. Swallowing that old fear, she quietly entered the sewers a block or two down from where he'd climbed in, and listened carefully. Dripping water, the reek of refuse, the scurrying of rats. And splashing steps ahead, around the next big intersection of tunnels. Perfect. Aelin kept her blades concealed in her suit, not wanting them to rust in the sewer dampness. She clung to the shadows, her steps soundless as she neared the crossroads and peered around the corner. Sure enough, the Volg commander was striding down the tunnel, his back to her, headed deeper into the system. When he was far enough ahead, she slipped around the corner, keeping to the darkness, avoiding the patches of light that shone through the overhead grates. Tunnel after tunnel, she trailed him, until he reached a massive pool. It was surrounded by crumbling walls covered in grime and moss, so ancient that she wondered if they'd been among the first built in Rifthold. But it wasn't the man kneeling before the pool, its waters fed by rivers snaking in from either direction, that made her breath catch and panic flood her veins. It was the creature that emerged from the water. Chapter 27. The creature rose, its black stone body cutting through the water with hardly a ripple. The Volg commander knelt before it, head down, not moving a muscle as the horror uncoiled to its full height. Her heart leaped into a wild beat, and she willed it to calm as she took in the details of the creature that now stood waist-deep in the pool, water dripping off its massive arms and elongated serpentine snout. She'd seen it before. One of eight creatures carved into the clock tower itself. Eight gargoyles that she'd once sworn had watched her, smiled at her. Was there currently one missing from the clock tower? Or had the statues been molded after this monstrosity? She willed strength to her knees. A faint blue light began pulsing from beneath her suit. Shit. The eye. Never a good sign when it flared. Never, never, never. She put a hand over it, smothering the barely perceptible glow. Report, the thing hissed through a mouth of dark stone teeth. Wordhound. That's what she would call it. Even if it didn't look remotely like a dog, she had the feeling that the gargoyle thing could track and hunt as well as any canine, and obeyed its master well. The commander kept his head lowered. No sign of the general, or those who helped him get away. We received word that he'd been spotted heading down the southern road, riding with five others for Fenharrow. I sent two patrols after them. She could thank Arabin for that. Keep looking, the wordhound said, the dim light glinting on the iridescent veins running through its obsidian skin. The general was injured. He can't have gotten far. The creature's voice stopped her cold. Not the voice of a demon, or a man, but the king. She didn't want to know what sort of things he'd done in order to see through this thing's eyes, speak through its mouth. A shudder crawled down her spine as she backed down the tunnel. The water running beside the raised walkway was shallow enough that the creature couldn't possibly swim there. But she didn't dare breathe too loudly. Oh, she'd give Arabin his Volg commander, all right. Then she'd let Kaol and Nezrin hunt them all into extinction. but not until she had the chance to speak to one on her own. It took Aelin 10 blocks to stop the shaking in her bones. 10 blocks to debate whether she would even tell them what she'd seen and what she had planned. But walking in the door and seeing Adian pacing by the window was enough to set her on edge again. "Would you look at that," she drawled, throwing back her hood. "I'm alive and unharmed."
"You said 2 hours. You were gone 4.
"I had things to do, things that only I can do. So to accomplish those things, I needed to get out. You're in no shape to be in the streets, especially if there's danger."
"You swore there wasn't any danger."
"Do I look like an oracle? There is always danger. Always." That wasn't even the half of it.
"You reek of the god's damned sewers," Adian snapped. "Wanna tell me what you were doing there?"
"No, not really."
Adian rubbed at his face. "Do you understand what it was like to sit on my ass while you were gone? You said 2 hours. What was I supposed to think?"
"Adian," she said as calmly as she could, and pulled off her filthy gloves before taking his broad, calloused hand. "I get it. I do.
What were you doing that was so important it couldn't wait a day or two?"
His eyes were wide, pleading. "Scouting."
"You're good at this, aren't you? Half-truths."
"One, just because you're you, it doesn't entitle you to information about everything I do. 2,
there you go with the lists again."
She squeezed his hand hard enough to shatter a lesser man's bones. "If you don't like my lists, then don't pick fights with me." He stared at her. She stared right back. Unyielding. Unbreakable. They'd been cut from the same cloth. Adian loosed a breath and looked at their joined hands, then opened his to examine her scarred palm, crisscrossed with the marks of her vow to Nehemia and the cut she'd made the moment she and Rowan became Karanam, their magic joining them in an eternal bond.
"It's hard not to think all of your scars are my fault."
"Oh. Oh." It took her a breath or two, but she managed to cock her chin at a devious angle and say, "Please, half of these scars I rightly deserved." She showed him a small scar down the inside of her forearm. "See that one? A man in a tavern sliced me open with a bottle after I cheated him in a round of cards and tried to steal his money." A choked sound came from him. "You don't believe me?"
"Oh, I believe you. I didn't know you were so bad at cards that you had to resort to cheating."
Adian chuckled quietly, but the fear lingered. So she peeled back the collar of her tunic to reveal a thin necklace of scars. "Baba Yellowlegs, matron of the Yellowlegs witch clan, gave me these when she tried to kill me. I cut off her head, then cut her corpse into little bits, then shoved it all into the oven of her wagon."
"I wondered who killed Yellowlegs."
She could have embraced him for that sentence alone, for the lack of fear or disgust in those eyes. She walked to the buffet table and pulled out a bottle of wine from inside the cabinet. "I'm surprised you beasts didn't drink all my good alcohol these past months." She frowned at the cabinet. "Looks like one of you got into the brandy."
"Ren's grandfather," Adian said,
tracking her movements from his spot by the window. She opened the bottle of wine and didn't bother with a glass as she slumped onto the couch and swigged. "This one," she said, pointing to a jagged scar by her elbow. Adian came around the couch to sit beside her. He took up nearly half of the damn thing. "The pirate lord of Skull's Bay gave that to me after I trashed his entire city, freed his slaves, and looked damn good while doing it." Adian took the bottle of wine and drank from it.
"Has anyone ever taught you humility?"
"You didn't learn it, so why should I?" Adian laughed, and then showed her his left hand. Several of the fingers were crooked.
"In the training camps, one of those Otterlanian bastards broke every finger when I mouthed off. Then he broke them in a second place because I wouldn't stop swearing at him after."
She whistled through her teeth, even as she marveled at the bravery, the defiance, even as pride for her cousin mingled with the slightest tinge of shame for herself. Adian yanked up his shirt to reveal a muscled abdomen, where a thick, jagged slash plunged from his ribs to his belly button.
"Battle near Rosamel.
6-inch serrated hunting knife curved on the tip. Rutting prick got me here.
He pointed to the top, then dragged his finger down and sliced south.
Shit, she said. How the hell are you still breathing?
Luck. And I was able to move as he dragged it down, keeping him from gutting me. At least I learned the value of shielding after that.
So they went on through the evening and the night, passing the wine between them. One by one, they told the stories of the wounds accumulated in the years spent apart. And after a while, she peeled off her suit and turned to show him her back, to show him the scars and the tattoos she'd had etched over them. When she again reclined on the couch, Adian showed her the scar across his left pectoral from the first battle he'd fought, when he'd finally been able to win back the sword of Orinth, her father's sword. He padded to what she now considered his room, and when he returned, he held the sword in his hands as he knelt.
"This belongs to you,"
he said hoarsely. Her swallow was loud in her ears. She folded Adian's hands around the scabbard, even as her heart fractured at the sight of her father's blade, at what he had done to attain it, to save it.
"It belongs to you, Adian."
He didn't lower the blade.
"It was just for safekeeping."
"It belongs to you," she said again.
"There is no one else who deserves it."
"Not even her," she realized. Adian took a shuddering breath and bowed his head.
"You're a sad drunk," she told him,
and he laughed. Adian set the sword on the table behind him and slumped back onto the couch. He was large enough that she was nearly popped off her own cushion, and she glared at him as she straightened.
"Don't break my couch, you hulking brute."
Adian ruffled her hair and stretched his long legs out before him.
10 years, and that's the treatment I get from my beloved cousin.
She elbowed him in the ribs. 2 more days passed, and Adian was going out of his mind, especially as Aelin kept sneaking out only to return covered in filth and reeking to Hellas's fiery realm. Going to the rooftop for fresh air wasn't the same as going out, and the apartment was small enough that he was starting to contemplate sleeping in the warehouse downstairs to have some sense of space. He always felt that way, though, whether in Rifthold or Orinth or at the finest of palaces. If he went too long without walking through forests or fields, without the kiss of the wind on his face. Gods above, he'd even take the Bane's war camp over this. It had been too long since he'd seen his men, laughed with them, listened to and secretly envied their stories about their families, their homes. But no longer. Not now that his own family had been returned to him. Not now that Aelin was his home. Even if the walls of her home now pushed on him. He must have looked as caged as he felt, because Aelin rolled her eyes when she came back into the apartment that afternoon.
All right, she said, throwing up her hands. I'd rather have you wreck yourself than destroy my furniture from boredom. You're worse than a dog.
Adian bared his teeth in a smile.
I aim to impress.
So they armed and cloaked themselves and made it 2 steps outside before he detected a female scent, like mint and some spice he couldn't identify, approaching them. Fast. He'd caught that scent before, but couldn't place it. Pain whipped his ribs as he reached for his dagger, but Aelin said, "It's Nezrin. Relax." Indeed, the approaching woman lifted a hand in greeting, though she was cloaked so thoroughly that Adian could see nothing of the pretty face beneath. Aelin met her halfway down the block, moving with ease in that wicked black suit of hers, and didn't bother waiting for Adian as she said, "Is something wrong?" The woman's attention flicked from Adian to his queen. He hadn't forgotten that day at the castle, the arrow she'd fired and the one she'd pointed at him.
"No, I came to deliver the report on the new nests we've found. But I can return later if you two are busy."
"We were just going out," Aelin said, "to get the general a drink." Nezrin's shoulder-length night-dark hair shifted beneath her hood as she cocked her head.
"You want an extra set of eyes watching your back?"
Adian opened his mouth to say no, but Aelin looked contemplative. She glanced over her shoulder at him,
and he knew she was assessing his condition to decide whether she might indeed want another sword among them. If Aelin were in the Bane, he might have tackled her right there. Adian drawled to the young rebel,
"What I want is a pretty face that doesn't belong to my cousin. Looks like you'll do the trick."
"You're insufferable," Aelin said. "And I hate to tell you, cousin, but the captain wouldn't be very pleased if you made a move on Falik."
"It's not like that," Nezrin said tightly.
Aelin lifted a shoulder. "It would make no difference to me if it was, the bare honest truth." Nezrin shook her head.
"I wasn't considering you, but it's not like that. I think he's content to be miserable."
The rebel waved a hand in dismissal.
"We could die any day, any hour. I don't see a point in brooding."
"Well, you're in luck, Nezrin Falik," Aelin said. "Turns out I'm as sick of my cousin as he is of me. We could use some new company." Adian sketched a bow to the rebel, the motion making his ribs positively ache, and gestured to the street ahead.
"After you."
Nezrin stared him down, as though she could see exactly where his injury was groaning in agony, and then followed after the queen. Aelin took them to a truly disreputable tavern a few blocks away. With impressive swagger and menace, she kicked out a couple of thieves sitting at a table in the back. They took one look at her weapons, at that utterly wicked suit of hers, and decided they liked having their organs inside their bodies. The three of them stayed at the taproom until last call, hooded so heavily they could hardly recognize one another, playing cards and refusing the many offers to join other players. They didn't have money to waste on real games. So for currency, they used some dried beans that Adian sweet-talked the harried serving girl into bringing them. Nezrin barely spoke as she won round after round, which Adian supposed was good, given that he hadn't quite decided if he wanted to kill her for that arrow she'd fired. But Aelin asked her questions about her family's bakery, about life for her parents on the southern continent, about her sister and her nieces and nephews. When at last they left the drinking hall, none of them having dared to get inebriated in public, and none of them too eager to go to sleep just yet, they meandered through the alleys of the slums. Adian savored every step of freedom. He'd been locked in that cell for weeks. It had hit an old wound, one he hadn't spoken about to Aelin or anyone else, though his highest-ranking warriors in the Bane knew, if only because they'd helped him exact his revenge years after the fact. Adian was still brooding about it when they strode down a narrow, foggy alley, its dark stones silvered with the light of the moon peeking out above. He picked up the scrape of boots on stone before his companions did, his fey ears catching the sound, and threw out an arm in front of Aelin and Nezrin, who froze with expert silence. He sniffed the air, but the stranger was downwind, so he listened. Just one person, judging from the near-silent footfalls that pierced through the wall of fog, moving with a predator's ease that made Adian's instincts rise to the forefront. Adian palmed his fighting knives as the male's scent hit him, unwashed, but with a hint of pine and snow, and then he smelled Aelin on the stranger, the scent complex and layered, woven into the male himself. The male emerged from the fog, tall, maybe taller than Adian himself, if only by an inch, powerfully built, and heavily armed both above and beneath his pale gray surcoat and hood. Aelin took a step forward. One step, as if in a daze. She loosed a shuddering breath, and a small whimpering noise came out of her. A sob. And then she was sprinting down the alley, flying as though the winds themselves pushed at her heels. She flung herself on the male, crashing into him hard enough that anyone else might have gone rocking back into the stone wall. But the male grabbed her to him, his massive arms wrapping around her tightly and lifting her up. Nezrin made to approach, but Adian stopped her with a hand on her arm. Aelin was laughing as she cried, and the male was just holding her, his hooded head buried in her neck, as if he were breathing her in. "Who is that?" Nezrin asked. Adian smiled.
"Rowan."
Chapter 28.
She was shaking from head to toe, and couldn't stop crying, not as the full weight of missing Rowan crashed into her, the weight of these weeks alone.
How did you get here? How did you find me?
Aelin withdrew far enough to study the harsh face shadowed by his hood, the tattoo peeking out along the side of it, and the grim line of his smile. He was here. He was here. He was here.
You made it clear my kind wouldn't be welcome on your continent,
he said. Even the sound of his voice was a balm and a blessing.
So I stowed away on a ship. You'd mentioned a home in the slums, so when I arrived this evening, I wandered until I picked up your scent.
He scanned her with a warrior's unflinching assessment, his mouth tight.
You have a lot to tell me,
he said, and she nodded. Everything. She wanted to tell him everything. She gripped him harder, savoring the corded muscle of his forearms, the eternal strength of him. He brushed back a loose strand of her hair, his calloused fingers scraping against her cheek in the lightest caress. The gentleness of it made her choke on another sob.
But you're not hurt,
he said softly.
You're safe.
She nodded again and buried her face in his chest. I thought I gave you an order to stay in Wendland.
I had my reasons. Best spoken somewhere secure,
he said under her hood.
Your friends at the fortress say hello, by the way. I think they miss having an extra scullery maid. Especially Luca. Especially in the mornings.
She laughed and squeezed him. He was here, and he wasn't something she'd made up, some wild dream she'd had, and...
Why are you crying?
He asked, trying to push her back far enough to read her face again. But she held on to him, so fiercely she could feel the weapons beneath his clothes. It would all be fine, even if it went to hell, so long as he was here with her. I'm crying, she sniffled. Because you smell so rutting bad, my eyes are watering. Rowan let out a roar of laughter that made the vermin in the alley go silent. She at last pulled away, flashing a grin.
Bathing isn't an option for a stowaway,
he said, releasing her only to flick her nose. She gave him a playful shove, but he glanced down the alley where Nezrin and Adian were waiting. He'd likely been monitoring every move they made, and if he had deemed them a true threat to her safety, they'd have been dead minutes ago.
Are you just going to make them stand there all night?
Since when are you a stickler for manners? She slung an arm around his waist, unwilling to let go of him lest he turn into wind and vanish. His casual arm around her shoulders was a glorious solid weight as they approached the others. If Rowan fought Nezrin, or even Kaol, there would be no contest. But Adian, she hadn't seen him fight yet. And from the look her cousin was giving Rowan, despite all of his professed admiration, she wondered if Adian was also wondering who'd emerge from that fight alive. Rowan stiffened a bit beneath her grip. Neither male broke their stare as they neared. Territorial nonsense. Aelin squeezed Rowan's side hard enough that he hissed and pinched her shoulder right back. Fey warriors, invaluable in a fight, and raging pains in her ass at all other times.
Let's get inside, she said.
Nezrin had retreated slightly to observe what was sure to be a battle of warrior arrogance for the ages.
I'll see you later,
the rebel said to none of them in particular, the corners of her mouth twitching upward before she headed off into the slums. Part of Aelin debated calling her back, the same part that had made her invite Nezrin along. The woman had seemed lonely, a bit adrift, but Felique had no reason to stay. Not right now. Adian fell into step in front of her and Rowan, silently leading the way back to the warehouse. Even through his layers of clothes and weapons, Rowan's muscles were tense beneath her fingers as he monitored Rifthold. She debated asking him what exactly he picked up with those heightened senses, what layers of the city she might never know existed. She didn't envy him his excellent sense of smell, not in the slums at least. But it wasn't the time or place to ask, not until they got to safety, until she talked to him, alone. Rowan examined the warehouse without comment before stepping aside to let her go in front of him. She'd forgotten how beautifully he moved that powerful body of his, a storm-given flesh. Tugging him by the hand, she led him up the stairs and into the great room. She knew he had taken in every detail, every entrance and exit and method of escape, by the time they were halfway across it. Adian stood before the fireplace, hood still on, hands still within easy reach of his weapons. She said over her shoulder to her cousin as they passed, "Adian, meet Rowan. Rowan, meet Adian. His Highness needs a bath, or I'll vomit if I have to sit next to him for more than a minute." She offered no other explanation before dragging Rowan into her bedroom and shutting the door behind them. Aelin leaned against the door as Rowan paused in the center of the bedroom, his face darkened by the shadows of his heavy gray hood. The space between them went taut, every inch of it crackling. She bit her bottom lip as she took him in. The familiar clothes, the assortment of wicked weapons, the immortal preternatural stillness. His presence alone stole the air from the room, from her lungs.
"Take off your hood,"
he said with a soft growl, his eyes fixed on her mouth. She crossed her arms. "You show me yours and I'll show you mine, Prince."
"From tears to sass in a few minutes.
I'm glad the month apart hasn't dimmed your usual good spirits." He yanked back his hood, and she started. "Your hair! You cut it all off!" She pulled off her own hood as she crossed the distance between them. Indeed, the long silver-white hair was now cropped short. It made him look younger, made his tattoo stand out more, and, fine, it made him more handsome, too. Or maybe that was just her missing him.
"Since you seemed to think that we would be doing a good amount of fighting here, shorter hair is more useful. Though I can't say that your hair might be considered the same. You might as well have dyed it blue."
"Hush. Your hair was so pretty. I was hoping you'd let me braid it one day. I suppose I'll have to buy a pony instead." She cocked her head. "When you shift, will your hawk form be plucked then?"
His nostrils flared, and she clamped her lips together to keep from laughing.
He surveyed the room, the massive bed she hadn't bothered to make that morning, the marble fireplace adorned with trinkets and books, the open door to the giant closet.
"You weren't lying about your taste for luxury."
"Not all of us enjoy living in warrior squalor," she said, grabbing his hand again. She remembered these calluses, the strength and size of his hands. His fingers closed around hers. Though it was a face she'd memorized, a face that had haunted her dreams these past few weeks, it was new, somehow. And he just looked at her, as if he were thinking the same thing. He opened his mouth, but she pulled him into the bathroom, lighting a few candles by the sink and on the ledge above the tub. "I meant it about the bath," she said, twisting the faucets and plugging the drain. "You stink." Rowan watched as she bent to grab a towel from the small cabinet by the toilet.
"Tell me everything."
She plucked up a green vial of bath salts and another of bath oil, and dumped in generous amounts of each, turning the rushing water milky and opaque. "I will when you're soaking in the bath and don't smell like a vagrant."
"If memory serves, you smelled even worse when we first met, and I didn't shove you into the nearest trough in Verez."
She glared. "Funny."
"You made my eyes water for the entire damn journey to Mistward."
"Just get in." Chuckling, he obeyed. She shrugged off her own cloak, then began unstrapping her various weapons as she headed out of the bathroom. She might have taken longer than usual to remove her weapons, peel off her suit, and change into a loose white shirt and pants. By the time she finished, Rowan was in the bath, the water so clouded she could see nothing of the lower body beneath. The powerful muscles of his scarred back shifted as he scrubbed at his face with his hands, then his neck, then his chest. His skin had deepened to a golden brown. He must have spent time outdoors these past weeks. Without clothing, apparently. He splashed water on his face again, and she started into movement, reaching for the washcloth she'd set on the sink.
"Here,"
she said a bit hoarsely. He just dunked it in the milky water and attacked his face, the back of his neck, the strong column of his throat. The full tattoo down his left arm gleamed with the water sliding off him.
Gods, he took up the entire bathtub.
She mutely handed him her favorite lavender-scented soap, which he sniffed at, sighed in resignation, and then began using. She took a seat on the curved lip of the tub and told him everything that had happened since they'd left. Well, mostly everything. He washed while she spoke, scrubbing himself down with brutal efficiency. He lifted the lavender soap to his hair, and she squeaked.
"You don't use that in your hair,"
she hissed, jolting from her perch to reach for one of the many hair tonics lining the little shelf above the bath.
"Rose, lemon verbena, or..."
She sniffed the glass bottle.
"Jasmine."
She squinted down at him. He was staring up at her, his green eyes full of the words he knew he didn't have to say.
"Do I look like I care what you pick?"
She clicked her tongue.
"Jasmine it is, you buzzard."
He didn't object, as she took up a place at the head of the tub and dumped some of the tonic into his short hair. The sweet, night-filled scent of jasmine floated up, caressing and kissing her. Even Rowan breathed it in as she scrubbed the tonic into his scalp.
"I could still probably braid this," she mused. "Very teensy-tiny braids, so..."
He growled, but leaned back against the tub. His eyes closed.
"You're no better than a house cat,"
she said, massaging his head. He let out a low noise in his throat that might very well have been a purr. Washing his hair was intimate, a privilege she doubted he'd ever allowed many people, something she'd never done for anyone else. But lines had always been blurred for them, and neither of them had particularly cared. He'd seen every bare inch of her several times, and she'd seen most of him. They'd shared a bed for months. On top of that, they were Kara Nam. He'd let her inside his power, past his inner barriers, to where half a thought from her could have shattered his mind. So washing his hair, touching him, it was an intimacy, but it was essential, too.
"You haven't said anything about your magic,"
she murmured, her fingers still working his scalp. He tensed.
"What about it?"
Fingers in his hair, she leaned down to peer at his face.
"I take it it's gone. How does it feel to be as powerless as a mortal?"
He opened his eyes to glare.
"It's not funny."
"Do I look like I'm laughing?"
"I spent the first few days sick to my stomach and barely able to move. It was like having a blanket thrown over my senses."
"And now?"
"And now I'm dealing with it."
She poked him in the shoulder. It was like touching velvet-wrapped steel.
"Grumpy, grumpy."
He gave a soft snarl of annoyance, and she pursed her lips to keep the smile in. She pushed down on his shoulders, beckoning him to dunk under the water. He obeyed. And when he emerged, she rose from the tiles and grabbed the towel she'd left on the sink.
"I'm going to find you some clothes."
"I have..."
"Oh, no, those are going right to the laundress. And you'll get them back only if she can make them smell decent again. Until then, you'll wear whatever I give you." She handed him the towel, but didn't let go as his hand closed around it.
"You've become a tyrant, princess,"
he said. She rolled her eyes and released the towel, turning as he stood in a mighty movement, water sloshing everywhere. It was an effort not to peek over her shoulder.
"Don't you even dare,"
a voice hissed in her head.
Right.
She'd call that voice common sense, and she'd listen to it from now on. Striding into her closet, she went to the dresser in the back and knelt before the bottom drawer, opening it to reveal folded men's undershorts, shirts, and pants. For a moment, she stared at Sam's old clothes, breathing in the faint smell of him clinging to the fabric. She hadn't mustered the strength to go to his grave yet, but...
"You don't have to give those to me,"
Rowan said from behind her. She started a bit, and twisted in place to face him.
He was so damn stealthy.
Aelin tried not to look too jolted by the sight of him with the towel wrapped around his hips, at the tan and muscled body that gleamed with the oils of the bath, at the scars crisscrossing it like the stripes of a great cat. Even common sense was at a loss for words. Her mouth was a little dry as she said,
"Clean clothes are scarce in the house right now, and these are of no use sitting here."
She pulled out a shirt and held it up.
"I hope it fits."
Sam had been 18 when he died. Rowan was a warrior honed by 3 centuries of training and battle. She pulled out undershorts and pants.
"I'll get you proper clothes tomorrow."
I'm pretty sure you'll start a riot if the women of Rifthold see you walking down the streets in nothing but a towel. Rowan huffed a laugh and strode to the clothes hanging along one wall of the closet. Dresses, tunics, jackets, shirts.
You wore all this?
She nodded and uncoiled to her feet. He flicked through some of the dresses and embroidered tunics.
These are very beautiful,
he admitted.
I would have pegged you for a proud member of the anti-finery crowd.
Clothes are weapons, too,
he said, pausing on a black velvet gown. Its tight sleeves and front were unadorned, the neckline skimming just beneath the collarbones. Unremarkable, save for the tendrils of embroidered shimmering gold creeping over the shoulders. Rowan angled the dress to look at the back, the true masterpiece. The gold embroidery continued from the shoulders, sweeping to form a serpentine dragon, its maw roaring toward the neck, the body curving down until the narrow tail formed the border of the lengthened train. Rowan loosed a breath.
I like this one best.
She fingered the solid black velvet sleeve. I saw it in a shop when I was 16 and bought it immediately. But when the dress was delivered a few weeks later, it seemed too old. It overpowered the girl I was. So I never wore it. And it's hung here for 3 years. He ran a scarred finger down the golden spine of the dragon.
You're not that girl anymore,
he said softly.
Someday, I want to see you wear this.
She dared to look up at him, her elbow brushing his forearm.
I missed you.
His mouth tightened.
We weren't apart that long.
Right. To an immortal, several weeks were nothing. So, am I not allowed to miss you?
I once told you that the people you care about are weapons to be used against you. Missing me was a foolish distraction.
You're a real charmer, you know that.
She hadn't expected tears or emotion, but it would have been nice to know he'd missed her at least a fraction as badly as she had. She swallowed, her spine locking, and pushed Sam's clothes into his arms.
You can get dressed in here.
She left him in the closet and went right to the bathroom, where she splashed cold water on her face and neck. She returned to her bedroom to find him frowning.
Well, the pants fit.
Barely. They were too short and did wonders for showing off his backside, but...
The shirt is too small,
he said.
I didn't want to rip it.
He handed it to her, and she looked a bit helplessly at the shirt, then at his bare torso.
I'll go out first thing.
She sighed sharply through her nose.
Well, if you don't mind meeting Adian shirtless, I suppose we should go say hello.
We need to talk.
Good talk or bad talk?
The kind that will make me glad you don't have access to your power so you don't spew flames everywhere.
Her stomach tightened, but she said,
That was one incident, and if you ask me, your absolutely wonderful former lover deserved it.
More than deserved it.
The encounter with the visiting group of highborn Fae at Mistward had been miserable, to say the least. And when Rowan's former lover had refused to stop touching him, despite his request to do so, when she threatened to have Aelin whipped for stepping in. Well, Aelin's new favorite nickname, Fire-Breathing Bitch Queen, had been fairly accurate during that dinner. A twitch of his lips, but shadows flickered in Rowan's eyes. Aelin sighed again and looked at the ceiling.
Now or later?
Later. It can wait a bit.
She was half tempted to demand he tell her whatever it was, but she turned toward the door. Adian rose from his seat at the kitchen table as Aelin and Rowan entered. Her cousin looked Rowan over with an appreciative eye and said,
You never bothered to tell me how handsome your fairy prince is, Aelin.
Aelin scowled. Adian just jerked his chin at Rowan.
Tomorrow morning you and I are going to train on the roof. I want to know everything you know.
Aelin clicked her tongue.
All I've heard from your mouth these past few days is Prince Rowan this and Prince Rowan that. And yet this is what you decide to say to him? No bowing and scraping?
Adian slid back into his chair.
If Prince Rowan wants formalities, I can grovel. But he doesn't look like someone who particularly cares.
With a flicker of amusement in his green eyes, the Fae Prince said,
Whatever my queen wants.
Oh, please. Adian caught the words, too.
My queen. The two princes stared at each other, one gold and one silver, one her twin and one her soul bonded. There was nothing friendly in the stares, nothing human. Two fey males locked in some unspoken dominance battle. She leaned against the sink.
If you're going to have a pissing contest, can you at least do it on the roof?
Rowan looked at her, brows high. But it was Adian who said, She says we're no better than dogs, so I wouldn't be surprised if she actually believes we'd piss on her furniture. Rowan didn't smile, though, as he tilted his head to the side and sniffed.
Adian needs a bath, too, I know, she said. He insisted on smoking a pipe at the taproom. He said it gave him an air of dignity.
Rowan's head was still angled as he asked,
Your mothers were cousins, Prince. But who sired you?
Adian lounged in his chair. Does it matter?
Do you know?
Rowan pressed. Adian shrugged.
She never told me. Or anyone.
I'm guessing you have some idea?
Aelin asked. Rowan said,
He doesn't look familiar to you?
He looks like me.
Yes, but...
He sighed.
You met his father a few weeks ago, Gavriel.
Adian stared at the shirtless warrior, wondering if he'd strained his injuries too much tonight and was now hallucinating. The prince's words sank in. Adian just kept staring. A wicked tattoo in the old language stretched down the side of Rowan's face and along his neck, shoulder, and muscled arm. Most people would take one look at that tattoo and run in the other direction. Adian had seen plenty of warriors in his day, but this male was a warrior, law unto himself. Just like Gavriel, or so the legends claimed. Gavriel, Rowan's friend, one of his cadre, whose other form was a mountain lion.
He asked me, Aelin murmured. He asked me how old I was, and seemed relieved when I said 19.
19 was too young, apparently, to be Gavrielle's daughter. Though she looked so similar to the woman he'd once bedded, Adian didn't remember his mother well. His last memories were of a gaunt, gray face as she sighed her final breath, as she refused the fey healers who could have cured the wasting sickness in her. But he had heard she'd once looked almost identical to Aelin and her mother, Evelyn. Adian's voice was hoarse as he asked,
The lion is my father?
A nod from Rowan.
Does he know? I bet seeing Aelin was the first time he wondered if he'd sired a child with your mother. He probably still doesn't have any idea, unless that prompted him to start looking.
His mother had never told anyone but Evelyn, who his father was. Even when she was dying, she'd kept it to herself.
She'd refused those fey healers because of it. Because they might identify him. And if Gavriel knew he had a son,
if Maeve knew.
An old ache ripped through him. She'd kept him safe. Had died to keep him out of Maeve's hands. Warm fingers slid around his hand and squeezed. He hadn't realized how cold he was. Aelin's eyes, their eyes, the eyes of their mothers, were soft. Open.
This changes nothing, she said. About who you are. About what you mean to me. Nothing.
But it did. It changed everything. Explained everything. The strength, the speed, the senses, the lethal predatory instincts he'd always struggled to keep in check. Why Roe had been so hard on him during his training. Because if Evelyn knew who his father was, then Roe certainly did too. And fey males, even half-fey males, were deadly. Without the control Roe and his lords had drilled into him from an early age. Without the focus, they'd known, and kept it from him. Along with the fact that after he swore the blood oath to Aelin one day, he might very well remain young, while she grew old and died. Aelin brushed her thumb against the back of his hand, and then pivoted toward Rowan. What does this mean where Maeve is concerned? Gavriel is bound through the blood oath, so she would have a claim on his offspring?
Like hell she does, Adian said.
If Maeve tried to claim him, he'd rip out her throat. His mother had died for fear of the Fey Queen. He knew it in his bones.
Rowan said.
I don't know. Even if she thought so, it would be an act of war to steal Adian from you.